Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Alex Schumacher. Regardless of where you live, there's a good chance you've probably heard of the Guthrie Theater. Based here in Minneapolis, the Guthrie is an internationally renowned regional theater, and it's hosted many amazing actors and shows on its various stages over the years. Less well known, though, is the Guthrie BFA Acting Program. The program is essentially an exclusive acting conservatory housed within the larger University of Minnesota. Currently, the Guthrie is doing a performance of Cyrano de Bergerac, which is running until May 5th, and of the cast of 20-some actors, 7 of them participated in the Guthrie BFA Acting Program. Reporter Hannah Dove and I got an opportunity to sit down with 4 of these actors and talk with them about their experiences in the program and their role in the production.
So you want me to start talking about my BFA experience?
Just a few sentences.
Okay. If I go on for too long, you just tell me to shut up. Hi, my name is Nate Cheeseman. I graduated from the BFA program in 2013. I went to the BFA program because I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, so not too far away. And a high school drama director of mine brought us to the Guthrie, and we saw a production of Peer Gynt with Mark Rylance. And so when I came and saw that production with our drama program, I figured if this guy is associated with this theater, and if this theater has a school, I want to go to that school. Because Mark Rylance is an incredible performer, and I know most all young actors definitely look up to him. And if you've ever seen him live, he's really special. So I went to the BFA, I auditioned, got in, and they were very heavily focused, at least when I was there, on classical text, specifically Shakespeare, going into Chekhov. We did Greek projects. Whole sophomore year was very focused on the technical aspect of doing classical theater, what it takes to get that rhetoric to read to an audience like it's a contemporary text. I grew up going to a theater called American Players Theater in Wisconsin, and I wanted to gain the skills that I felt like those actors had on stage. And when I went to school working with Steve Cardamone, who I think is, as far as teaching classical text, the best there is, Lucinda Holshue, our voice and text coach, who really taught us to use our own voices to really be able to speak Shakespeare's text, but just speak it for ourselves. Marcella Lorca, who is definitely one of the best movement teachers in the country, if not the best, who runs 10,000 Things now. The late Ken Washington, I worked with junior and senior year. Judy Bartle used to run the company when I went to school there. I know that has since changed hands and is in very good hands with Maya Garcia, who I've recently met, and I think the program's going definitely in the right direction with her. All my teachers that we worked with and the company of 20 actors that I was with, I felt was incredibly beneficial in getting me on track to have a career once I graduated. And being back in the building and working not only with an incredible cast, but with 6 other members of the same program is incredibly gratifying.
Hey, I'm Eric Shabla. I graduated the BFA in 2016. There's nothing really particularly extraordinary about my story of getting in. I'm a Scani too, like Nate. I grew up in Milwaukee. I also went to APT as a kid. I have to echo what Nate said about the faculty. I mean, I think it's just one of the strongest group of artists, teaching artists in the country. And I didn't know this coming in, but compared to a lot of other schools, our program does not have, there's not a lot of bells and whistles. Our relationship with the theater is so strong and so great. And the fact that as you're learning, you get to spend time in this building is so cool. But there was a lot of, how are we going to costume this show? Go raid your closet. And in retrospect, that was actually great because there was nothing else to rely on but the language and the acting values and the things we were being taught every day. I know I had friends who went to other big schools, and you know, their first show they're doing, it's fully produced and they've got all this stuff they're dealing with in addition to the acting. And I felt like pretty much all 4 years, the focus was completely on how do we tell a story with as little as possible, which is really cool. And actually coming out of school has been this process of learning like, okay, now how do you add the other elements that we didn't have when we were in school. And yeah, I'll just say again, I think the faculty is so extraordinary. A lot of the stuff I learned in Marcella Lorca's class, I use every day when I go to work, every day. And the same thing is said, you know, could be said of Steve's class. I think the London program is extraordinary. Our junior year, we go to London in the fall and train at Shakespeare's Globe. and with some of the people there, and we end up doing a performance on the Globe stage in London, which is really cool. And that was something that, you know, every 18-year-old Shakespeare nerd wants to do, right? And so it was really cool to check that one off the list.
Hi, I'm David O'Connell. I'm in the class of 2019. So yeah, I echo everything that Nate and Eric said about the faculty and the program. And I'm sure once we start talking about Cyrano, a lot of how those skills have been implemented into our current work is going to be expanded on. My story with this program, finding it was sort of interesting. So my sister, who's since gone on to law school, did study theater, and she was looking at this program and auditioned and made it to the callback weekend and was telling me about, she saw a production of The Winter's Tale that actually some of our cast members were in. And as a kid, I would just randomly decide, oh, this is my dream school. And what was funny is that I decided as a kid, and I knew I kind of wanted to follow in her footsteps, I was like, oh, I'm going to go there someday. Yeah, that's where I'm going to go. And then actually sort of went into high school, let it all slip my mind, wasn't thinking about it. And it wasn't until the audition process that I even started looking into it. I come from Rhode Island, the smallest state, so I did not grow up going to APT, but I did grow up going to Trinity Repertory Company in Providence, and they are one of the only regional theaters in the country that still has a resident acting company of somewhere between 15 and 18 members. And so I grew up seeing these actors play such a wide range of roles. They do 7 or 8 plays a year, and seeing how their voices, their bodies, their emotional lives were so fluid and so honed to the point where you never saw the technique, but it impacted you and your experience. And the kind of training we have here, I think, really serves that kind of work, that idea of being the most complete actor you possibly can be. And Minneapolis is a great theater town. It's really cold. But a funny thing my mother told me once I was going to move here, and I had completely forgotten this, was when I was a kid, I used to watch The Mighty Ducks. And I had, for no reason at all, just thought, oh, it'd be cool to live in Minneapolis. And apparently I talked about it as a kid. Didn't remember. I was probably like 6. And then my mother told me this, and I was like, oh my gosh, I remember. So yeah, Mighty Ducks brought me here.
I'm Mark Mazzarella. I'm in the graduating class of 2020, so currently a junior.
So I started doing the theater thing when I was really young, because I grew up in L.A., so not in the area at all. And when I was living in L.A., I started off doing music and then got into theater through musical theater and opera. Did that for a while I was living there. Then my family moved up north a little bit to a little island off the coast of Washington State. I had the opportunity to get really into doing Shakespeare, because there's one professional theater on San Juan Island. And so I was really fortunate to work with that theater, get some experience, you know, working with professional actors, obviously playing, you know, small children's roles, but just getting to observe the process. And so through that, I ended up getting into the Midwest because I went to a boarding arts high school called Interlochen Arts Academy. Went there for 4 years, studied with some really, really magnificent teachers and some really wonderful other students that I was working with. And so that was how I had never been to Minneapolis, but I had seen other actors who I respect a lot come to the BFA program, people like Ben Lorberg, who has just returned to the cities and just worked with Marcella Lorca doing a show at 10,000 Things, and, you know, and a close friend of mine. And so kind of was inspired to look into the program through them. And the program has a really lovely callback weekend process, where basically if you audition for the program and they're interested in you, they basically offer to house you for a weekend in Minneapolis. You get a chance to see some of what the program does, some of what the Guthrie does, and you really just get a good opportunity, particularly for us who aren't from the area, to get a feeling of what the city is like and what the program is like. And so that was really when I decided, you know, this is the place that I want to go. And yeah, echoing the faculty here is spectacular. Steve is wonderful, of course. One of the newer faculty members, Jill, is another one of our voice and speech teachers, and she's fantastic. And I just got back from London, and the faculty there is really, really wonderful, as is the opportunity to get to work on the Globe stage.
So, from everyone's stories, I hear everyone's been bouncing around a lot. Whether you've originated from Wisconsin or Rhode Island, L.A., but some people have been to London, some people have been just all around the States. How do you think this movement has factored into your theater experience?
I think I can speak to that. So yeah, as Mark and others said, we go to London. We all have that experience in the BFA program. And they talk about it a lot when you're over there, how it's a global city. To me, what I got out of it, it was the most transformative experience of my life, because the access to art, but the access to not just art, but global art, a global perspective. It's invaluable for an actor. It broadens your theory of mind, your understanding of different cultures, your understanding of how people's psychology works, not just on an intimate scale, but on a broad scale. And travel to me, in addition to being enjoyable and just almost like meditation, just so fulfilling. When you are an actor, even if it's subconscious, you do bring those lessons you learn, you do bring that understanding of people, and I think it makes you more empathetic, and I think it makes you a more effective actor, especially in a play like this, where it takes place in Paris, and, you know, having been to Paris during my time in London during a few days off, that subconsciously seeps into the performance. So that's just one example.
Yeah, and jumping off of that, I mean, I think it's just like, this is something a lot of people will tell you, but I think it's so true, is that, like, you have to be a person before you can be an actor, you know? You need to be able to have a wide array of experiences to draw on in order to be able to connect to different people who are in different circumstances than you might be. So yeah, I mean, just like the travel that we did in London, you know, I mean, they're really wonderful, and they give us a 10-day break in the middle of the semester, and a lot of us use that opportunity to go all over the place. I took that time to go to Morocco with a couple of friends. So in particular, like, the London experience is really wonderful for that. But also, I mean, it's another advantage to being able to work with people from all over the country and all over the world. And yeah, and being able to develop a company of actors with people from all of these different broad places.
I'll also say, as a young actor, in order to make the career work, you have to be flexible with where you live. You can't have the comfortability of living in one place all the time and expect to work that whole time. I mean, and that happens for some people, and good for them. But you also have to be really flexible with where you're willing to go. I mean, I've been living I live out of a duffel bag, because I will take work anywhere in the country. I graduated in 2013, and 2013 was the last year that I spent a whole year in one place, because I go work elsewhere. I'm open to going to the West Coast, going to the East Coast, going, you know, south, like going anywhere I need to go in order to keep working. And that's not for everyone, but I think as a young actor graduating from the program, to be flexible to the idea of just grabbing a bag and going is gonna help. And that's how you're gonna get your experience in.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've probably moved. I've been out of school 3 years, and I think I've moved over half a dozen times, eight, nine times. And worked in Utah and Chicago and Kansas and other places. So it's exhausting. It's exhausting doing that. But that's part of how you build stamina. It's a great exercise for a young actor too, because you're in a new place. A lot of times you know very few people or no one. And so you can't afford to be an asshole. You really, really have to exercise your empathy and really make the people you're working with your family to some extent, which can be really hard sometimes, and it can be really easy and great other times. It's sort of a double-edged sword, and I think I've heard from some older actors who have continued to move through the bulk of their career that they feel a little like they've had to exchange their quality of life for their work at times. So that's something I think, personally, something I'm always looking to figure out. It's like, how do I balance this a little better with having a life, you know? I mean, you can have a life and be on the road, too, certainly. How do you balance your career and your personal life and your happiness and all those things?
I think at a certain point, you just got to be comfortable with saying no. When you're a young actor, you want to say yes all the time and go through this door that leads to this door that leads to this door. And I think that's a good way of building experience. But at a certain point, even if a gig's real good, if you need to spend some time at home around your loved ones, you have to say no. And no can be really alluring too. Like, you know, you say no to a theater company and, you know, they might be a little let down. A year goes by, you're free again, and now they want to hire you because you said, you know, you left them with a little mystery, right?
I'm just on the cusp of graduation, and it's been a joke with myself and my classmates that we can't turn a corner without somebody we don't even know being like, so where are you moving after this? It's just the constant question. What I always say, and especially you get it in auditions sometimes, and you're like, I'll give me a job and maybe we'll talk, you know, but I think it's easy to listen to the fear voice, especially, I hope it's only at our age, because it'd be nice to outgrow it. The idea that's like, well, if I don't take every job, I'm never going to get another offer. There'll never be another opportunity that comes along. But the thing I keep, and I don't think I discovered this until almost the last few months, is that your instincts end up being so right. When you like take a chance on doing something or not doing something, things tend to work out in some sort of roundabout way.
You're all actors. We know that. But I assume that you also have other artistic hobbies, talents, painting, music, maybe even screenwriting. So how do these different kind of art forms factor into how you put on a performance, how you become a character, how you act?
Yeah, so in addition to being an actor, I do consider myself a musician. I compose and I play a number of instruments. And so just on a very technical level, like, that's very helpful for me because, like, it is becoming a bit of a trend in a lot of theater circles to include live music. And also just, you know, at a very technical level, it is nice to be able to have just a diverse set of skills that can be useful on stage. So at a certain level, it's that. But also, like, for me, it's just helpful because acting is, it is my passion and it is a thing that I am, you know, devoting myself to and devoting my training to and everything. But also it's a job, too, and there are certainly days when it's like, oh, God, I don't want to, you know, I'm just not feeling it today. And it's good, I find, just to also have, in addition to acting, another sort of way of expressing myself artistically. When I am having those kind of off days, I can have my job, and then I can have another passion that I can pour myself into when I don't feel like pouring myself into my job. We do have to commit to the work we do. We have to be present every time that we work because otherwise, you know, it just doesn't work. I just find it good to have another outlet just for the sake of my own sanity.
And I think having that other outlet is so cyclical with your work because going back to the amazing Marcella Lorca, she said something once, my class, we were probably complaining about something, about like needing to work overtime or something, you know, just whining. And she said, you know, if you let your body give energy, if you give yourself to something, it comes back. And I think that's true physically. And I also think it's true with your spirit. And I think that you do have to give a lot when you're doing a play, when you're working on a character. And it's sometimes nice to then have something to go back to.
Yeah, I'd say the hardest part about being an actor is how to conduct yourself when you're not working. I mean, because if you get into like a 4 or 5 month stint where you're not in a play, it just gets dark really fast. You start getting really negative. And it's inevitable, and it's hard. And even if you know that going into that 4 month or 5 months that you're not in a play, you're still going to struggle. It's really hard. And so if you can find something that keeps you sane and keeps you happy, that's also like expressing yourself artistically, that's great. I mean, I started writing plays. They're not good plays, but I enjoy writing them, you know, and I'm not trying to get them, you know, produced here at the Guthrie or anything. But when I'm not in a play, and I can just sit down in a coffee shop and write a play, it fulfills me in a way that I need when I'm in those breaks where you're not working. I think the BFA program did a great job at making us well-rounded humans so that when we're not working in the theater, we have other skills to work at other places. We go to what's called a conservatory program, and most conservatory programs, you're acting all day. That's the only thing you're there to do, which is great because we love acting. But at the Guthrie BFA with the University of Minnesota, we do a conservatory program, plus we do all of our general education courses too. We have the benefit of getting a great education through the University of Minnesota as well as a conservatory acting, which is what, when we were 18, we were like, that's what we want to do. But now that we're older, we're like, well, we have other skills too, you know. So that's another great thing about the program that I advocate for.
The stuff that you do outside of your acting work presumably makes you a better artist. Chekhov said if you want to work on your art, work on your life. It's essential to have other things. And like Nate said, like when you're unemployed, you're going to be kicking yourself if the only thing you're interested in is being on stage. And you're going to be, frankly, a boring actor. You will become a boring actor if that's all you're interested in. There's something really ennobling, something that kind of widens your perspective about getting a full liberal arts education. Now, when I'm not working, I work with horses. And I discovered that mostly through the the university. In school, I got with the veterinary hospital and the equine program, and I learned a bunch of skills that I now use when I'm not employed as an actor, which is really cool. And for me, having something that's totally separate from acting, at least kind of superficially, like you'd think handling a, you know, 1,000-pound animal has nothing to do with being in a play. And that's true in some ways. But of course, there's always overlap. Presence is so important with a horse. You know, the horse is the natural empath, right? All right brain. So if you're not completely there with the animal, you are in danger because they could kill you with, you know, a tiny movement. So there's real applications. You'd be surprised by how your artwork connects to the other interests you have. Just think it's so, so important. Not just to sort of peripherally have other interests, but to actively cultivate them is really important.
And jumping off of that, I mean, like, this is a career where it's pretty normal to go unemployed for months at a time. You don't have some other creative outlet. Not only is that bad, you know, just for your own sanity, but it's bad for your work, too. If you are a musician, you don't go 5 months without picking up your instrument and then expect to pick up your instrument after at 5 months and be able to play a symphony. You have to continually be practicing and honing your craft. For us, I mean, our craft at a certain level is being a fully rounded human being who can empathize with other fully rounded human beings and imagine ourselves in their circumstances. And so if we aren't doing something that is helping us hone that craft, it's going to get stale when we're not working.
That's a really good point, Mark. I would add to that, too, that I think part of your job when you're unemployed as an actor is to stay engaged with the world. And that sounds like a big kind of like, ooh, hippie thing. Like, how do we stay engaged, right? But it's actually really important. It's so easy to sit on your couch and watch the same season of The Office on repeat. If you can find a way to stay present to what's happening around you and present to the world, it's going to make the transition back into your acting life so much less strange and awkward.
for our audience, let's say they don't know anything about the play. Give us like a sentence-long rundown.
So I play two characters. I play Valvert, the Vicomte de Valvert. Valvert is very high status. He is very, very close to De Guiche. So Valvert is actually quite high on the social ladder, and he's looking to climb higher. And so he comes to the theater to see this play, like everybody does at the top of the play. There's this big production of a play called La Clarisse by Balthazar Barrault, who is an actual French poet. And this guy Cyrano shows up, huge nose. Nobody really knows him super well, but he has a reputation for being a swagger, being really dangerous too, and really witty. And so Valvert goes, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll challenge him to a duel. And surprise, surprise, he gets killed in the duel. And then I become a cadet later, so that's kind of not as interesting. But anyway, so Cyrano falls in love with this woman, Roxanne, who's also at the theater. Cyrano has the incredible gift to speak his love into being, but he's afraid that she'll deny him because of the way he looks. And he meets this guy, Christian, who wants to join the cadets, which is the military group that he's a part of. And Christian is very beautiful, very good looking, and is in love with Roxanne, but he becomes really, really inarticulate when he's trying to talk to girls. So Cyrano recognizes this and thinks, maybe this could work if we both work on this together. I don't want to give too much away. I don't want to give away the ending. Basically, the play is about the love triangle of Roxanne, Christian, and Cyrano.
I play a couple of relatively small characters. I start off playing one of the cavaliers at the play. I'm one of a number of pretty high status people coming to the theater to obviously see the play, but also show off. As the play goes on, I turn into one of the cadets. The cadets are in a couple of the acts. They're sort of Cyrano's main group of comrades. They fight together. They drink together. They're all very boisterous and loud. The leader of the cadets is Captain Lebray. He's sort of the voice of reason to Cyrano, because Cyrano is a very emotional creature. He's the poet, he's romantic, whereas Lebray is very much the rational soldier, he's the strategist. So he's the grounding element to Cyrano.
Cyrano, if you've never seen it, it's an incredible play because it has everything. You're going to laugh a lot during the play, and then you're going to see a sword fight a second later, and then you're going to get a musical number after that, and then Cyrano is going to speak beautiful poetry, and then there's a whole act after intermission. We're at war. And then it all comes down to just Cyrano and Roxanne, only a couple characters at the end where it really, you know, focuses in. And I think Joseph Hage put together a beautiful adaptation that's very ensemble driven. As much as the place called Cyrano, and Cyrano is a very famous character that I'm sure all the actors at this table really want to play one day, Cyrano can't do the play without the ensemble. You know, I play three different characters. We all play, you know, three or four different characters. And we're all just trying to support the story and raise the stakes and really put our focus on Cyrano and Christian and Roxanne and ask ourselves, what can we do on stage to help support the story and help keep the world in a bigger place? Because if it's just a couple principal characters up there, then the world gets really small really fast. But, you know, we're there to just try to, you know, support it the best we can.
What I found so illuminating while working on it is just how universal it is. And there's this idea that people talk about in writing, and I think in acting too, the most seemingly specific, maybe even niche storyline can be the most universal thing ever. So you may love your nose. You know, somebody might read a synopsis of this play and think, this is the story about the big nose guy. But it really is about absolutely anyone and everyone, because everybody has something. It might be physical. It might be trauma. It might be something psychological. Everybody has gaps that they think keep them from finding love, finding success, finding personal contentment, whatever it is. I mean, if you think about Christian on paper is this handsome, everything that the women go mad for. But without Cyrano, he's in the same position as Cyrano. He feels that his inability to communicate holds him back from achieving what he wants, which is true love. Every single person knows what it feels like to magnify their own flaw. And that's something that Joe Hodge talked about in the rehearsal room, is that as much as Cyrano, it's a story about Cyrano with the big nose, but what it's really about is a man who magnifies the size of his nose in his mind to the point where he feels that he can't express his love.
What Joe always said, which I think is so, so brilliant, and I've never heard a director say this about this play, is that Christian feels just as deeply about Roxanne as Cyrano does, if not more so.
Another thing we talked about with Joe is that, like, a lot of productions do tend to paint Christian as this fool who is completely inarticulate and is the foil to Cyrano the genius and Christian the fool. But that's not the direction that Joe wanted to take this, because the way that we're seeing it in this show is that he's not a fool. I mean, the first time we ever see him in the play, he actually has a collection of quite a few very, very clever quips. In the first moments that we see Christian, it becomes very apparent that he's not a fool, but he is just incapable of expressing himself before Roxanne. It's not that he's a fool. It's that he just can't express himself before the woman that he loves.
Something I've been thinking about, too, is that with this production and with Joe's adaptation and his direction and then Jenny Greenberry, who plays Roxanne's performance, it's like Roxanne's time has come. If you look at the classical theater canon, the most beautiful plays, I mean, gorgeous plays, but something that can be a little troubling at times as a character like Roxanne, these women can sometimes become the ping pong ball in the love triangle between two men. What I find so wonderful in this production is that Roxanne is not an object. She's not a ping pong ball. She knows what she wants. She's smart and she's assertive about her needs. She is just as smart, just as witty as any of the men in the play. And that's something that is in the play, but it has not always been historically seen in the performances. And that's just something that I find great.
Well, that is all for this episode of Real College Podcast. Thanks to Hannah Dove and Allie McKernan at the Guthrie for all her help. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It is produced by Ben Hallam, Liv Riggins, Nathan Fervoy, and Lizzie Ritchie. Alex Schumacher is the host and managing editor. All episodes of Real College Podcast can be found online at radiok.org or on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thanks for listening.